This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. The Dean of the Georgia Senate is retiring after more than three decades. Senator George Hooks is an America's Democrat who has served in both the House and the Senate. He joins us now in his office at the state capitol. Senator Hooks, good to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
When you ran the first time, there were lots of rural Democrats in the Georgia General Assembly. You are one of the last rural white Democrats around. If you were starting now, would you even run as a Democrat?
I'd run as a Democrat if I ran in my district down there. If it held together, yes, I would. I would very much be in the minority. Frankly, parties were not thought about that much. You still had a two-party system, but it was just within the Democratic Party.
Looking at the Democrats now, compared to what they were like at the time you were running, do you still see a home for Democrats like yourself in the party?
I do, but it's stretched. They need to focus on what I'd call kitchen table bread and butter issues. They need to look at things that matter and are important. And to be lofty, it would be economic development in the rural areas. I represent one county that's got 18% unemployment. We need to focus on those type issues. Education is another key. The Constitution of this state requires that every child receive an adequate education. Well, in some of your rural Black Belt counties, old plantation counties that I represent, I mean, is that child getting the equal education that some child gets in, say, Dunwoody, Sandy Springs, or Buckhead? I mean, in a public school setting. We need to continue to examine those. It's going to take a lot of work and cooperation. But it takes it between the rural areas, the urban areas, it takes between Democrats or Republicans, and focus in on the state and the state's problems as a whole, and not look at my selfish little area.
How difficult is that to do, though, now? There's always been a divide between Atlanta and the rural areas. Is that gap wider now than it used to be, or are we seeing any kind of ability to look at problems holistically, as you were talking about?
I think it is wider. I really do, and it's regrettable. But again, it goes back to turf guarding in my particular area. They've got to go beyond this. I serve, for example, I'll use this as an example, I serve as the senator representative on the T-SPLOS for my region. Each region has at least one senator and two representatives on it. My region, most of the region that my home county's in, although I'm in several regions in my Senate district, falls in with Columbus. We had meeting after meeting after meeting, county commissioners, city council, mayors throughout the area, and we came up with a laundry list of projects and submitted it back to the board. In my particular region, the T-SPLOS passed unanimously by all the elected officials, from little county commissions like Webster County with 2,000 people in them, all the way up to the mayor of Columbus. So I was worked together. I notice in Atlanta they're still fractious and still fighting, and that's one of their biggest problems is transportation. So I think the difference is, and what they need to focus on, particularly in all these areas, is to look at the state as a whole and to try to solve the problems that affect all of us throughout the state of Georgia. There's always been the Atlanta versus the rest of the state. But it's now become the metro area rather than just strictly Atlanta.
You mentioned that in the rural areas, it's very hard to find equal educational opportunities to those that someone might find in metro Atlanta. Yet even in metro Atlanta, right now, the big public school districts are cutting hundreds of teaching positions, and they are putting in furlough days, larger class sizes. Part of the reason for that is that the quality basic education funding formula hasn't been fully funded for about a decade or so. You were a floor leader for Governor Harris when that was put in. Is that one of the reasons, underfunding of QBE, one of the reasons why we're having so much trouble both in Atlanta and in the rural areas?
Well, first of all, you're correct. QBE has never been funded to the point that we need it funded. However, considering that we have a very conservative budget, the proportion or the percentage we give to education is one of the largest in the nation. We just don't have the large budget that other states have. Frankly, QBE does need to be revised, and we've taken the first steps this year to make some revisions in that formula. It needs to continue to be revised and modernized so that we disperse those monies back where they on a better basis. I'll put it that way.
Will that mean that local districts will continue to face cuts, though?
Local districts have got to make that decision. I've got three. I represent 12 counties, 12 school boards, and three of my counties have been, one of them has been at 4 days a week for a number of years, and they have a large state university in that in that particular county, but they've been running 4 days a week, and they've saved some money, and that's been the way they do it. They have a longer school day. They have the same number of hours, but they still have that. Another problem we face in the rural areas is attracting our youngest and best and brightest teachers into those counties. We got their living wage up there and made it an attractive occupation, a vocation for a young person coming out of college and graduate school to pursue education as a career. So we've made some progress. Are we where we should be? No. We will continue to have to work. It's a moving target and a moving goal, and we'll have to continue to do that. But nothing's more important than education. That's your key. And then you can build on that as you build your other departments.
You've seen over the years, then, people saying absolutely no tax increases. That's become an article of faith for some folks in the legislature. Is that something that's tenable, given the problems we have and the time that we have in which to address them?
I'm as much opposed to any type tax increase as anybody else, but you never say never. Things change, and you need to be realistic, realizing that, you know, times change and conditions change. I just don't think that's a when you dig your heels in, you say my way or the highway on everything. Frankly, I don't think that's good government.
And yet a lot of state lawmakers are finding themselves in that position, either because they feel that way or because they're afraid of a primary opponent if they don't. Is that any different than it ever was?
To some degree. To some degree, yes, it is. I think it's more written in stone now than it was. Let me give you an example. When Herman Talmadge was elected governor for the second time, he was elected the first time to fill his father's seat, who had died in office. Second time he was elected was on his own. And he went throughout the state and said, I'm not going to raise your taxes. Well, during the first year, he realized the calamity Georgia's tax structure. We had hundreds of little bitty taxes on the books that didn't amount to anything, and we were one of the few states that didn't have a sales tax. So he rammed through a state sales tax. I understand it was absolutely brutal. I mean, he twisted arms, cracked kneecaps. I mean, blood was on the floor. But he got it through in 1951 or two, the 3 cent statewide sales tax. All of a sudden, money came into the state like crazy. And they managed, with his leadership, to build Talmadge Hospital at Augusta. They built the bridge in Savannah named for him. They built an enormous amount of roads, and they also had the largest school building projects in the history of the state. He really put the university system on the map with that, and when he went out of office in 1954, he was so popular that the dean of the United States Senate elected not to even run rather than face him in re-election, Walter F. George, and Talmadge got elected to the United States Senate. So he did things that needed to be done. Should you say no taxes at all? Frankly, I don't like voting for a tax increase, and I hope I'd have voted for very few, but you can't. I think you do a disservice to the citizens when you just say no, no, no. Georgia has not raised a motor fuel tax. We're the lowest in the nation since 1971. when President Carter, then Governor Carter, was governor and went in office. And frankly, the other states have moved ahead of us. So we need to examine that, and that's one of the things we'll be talking about this summer.
One of the things you'll be remembered for, among many, is the design of the state flag. This was after it had been changed from the Confederate battle cross to what a lot of folks call the blue flag. And you were one of the people who came up with the design, and yours was the final design that passed for the flag we have now, the three horizontal stripes and the blue field with the stars and the seal in it. Does it seem odd now that this flag has become part of Georgia and there's very little talk about the flag anymore? Does it seem odd looking back that it was just 10 years ago that there was so much anger, so much bitterness about whatever flag we had at the time?
Well, I'm pleased. I really am. I'm pleased. This was my goal, that we would move on and accept it and it would be over. It seems a little odd because it was so bitter, so intense, so caustic, that once we made that decision and once it was sold on from a historical standpoint, we could move on. My family fought for the Confederacy. I'm a product of Confederate soldiers that fought under this flag. So in a way, it was good that I was the sponsor of it. I wasn't an outsider. I wasn't involved in either battle one way or the other. And my family had, well, they fought in every war since the American Revolution from this state. So it moved us out. Yes, it seems in a way odd that that was just 10 years ago, but that was one of the most brutal battles we've been in probably the 20th century, the latter part of the 20th century in this state. But overall, I'm very, very pleased. It moved us away from that. Now we can focus on other things.
Could you understand the emotions on all sides at that time and why the flags, whichever one it was we were fighting over, was a symbol to somebody?
I can. As a many, many generation native of the state, I represent an area of the state that has a heavy African-American population, some majority in many of my counties, so I understand that reaction, but I'm also completely a product of the old Georgia, old South, if you will, and your heritage, as I said earlier, so I understand both sides of that particular issue.
That vote came after years and years of designs that were submitted for a state flag. One of the people who kept coming back year after year was Atlanta State Representative Tyrone Brooks, a civil rights leader. His design that he submitted for many years that never went anywhere ended up being very similar to what we actually ended up with. Could we have spared ourselves years of fighting if we had just adopted one of his proposals many years before?
That had been tried several times. In politics and in all of that, timing is everything, and the timing was right, and people were tired of it. They'd been harangued on all sides, and they were ready to have something acceptable and move forward.
As we mentioned a while ago, you've been in the majority, you've been in the minority. Do you think that the Republicans, particularly in the Senate, but elsewhere in the Capitol as well, did they learn from the mistakes that Democrats made when they had such a large measure of control, or have they repeated a lot of them?
Well, unfortunately, I think they've repeated a lot of them. They've learned from some, but there's always some members of the Senate, by no means all, by no means majority, who want to say, well, y'all did it to us, now we're going to do it to you. And that's childish, and unfortunately some people feel that way. I think the greatest problem we face in Georgia and really nationally is the inability to reach across the aisles and work together. I think we're the loser because of that.
Will it be up to just Republicans because they're in charge to make the moves, or is there anything that Democrats can do to reach across the aisle to say, okay, we can form coalitions here? What will it take to get out of the gridlock or the rut that we're in?
Well, No, it's not just Republicans. Democrats are just as much to blame. And it will take men and women of goodwill recognizing the problems of the state as a whole. And I go back to my original premise that you can't serve in the General Assembly, you can't serve in the U.S. Congress and say my way or the highway. You've got to look at the state and the state problems as a whole. And that's one of the things I hope that I've been able to do through the years.
Do you think that people, your voters, your constituents, still look at politics as public service, as a noble profession? Or do they look at it now more cynically than they did before?
No, I think they look at it as, in my constituents, look at it as a noble service and a calling. I average anywhere from 5 to 10 constituent telephone calls a day. And luckily, I reach out and try to solve their problems. And never lose focus on the little man. Never lose focus on their particular constituent problem. Get all lofty with all these philosophical things, but you solve the local little fellow's problems for them. That's the greatest public service.
You've said you would want to explore perhaps other ways of public service. Are you ruling out running for something else in the future?
I'm not ruling out anything. Nothing. I've learned long ago to never say never. I'm going to look at other areas I can use my expertise. Right now, my plan is to serve till January as active state senator. I'm here at the Capitol today working with a group of my constituents, and we'll focus on being a senator until January comes, and then I will look at other areas, certainly.
Any that you are thinking about?
None at the present.
When you leave, will there be anyone left who will wear a seersucker suit in the Capitol in warm weather?
I hope there will be. I love them. I've got several seersucker suits. That's all I wear in the summer. Plus white linen. I wear a white linen on occasion. So they're comfortable. They're cotton. That's Georgia cotton, Georgia products. They look good whether you're casual or dressed up.
America's State Senator George Hooks, a Democrat who will be retiring when his term runs out at the end of this year. Senator, thank you so much for giving us this time. We really appreciate it. And good luck.
Thank you.